He started the French presidential race as a dark horse outsider. But 3 months on, Emmanuel Macron is clinging on to a lead in the tensest of races. The latest poll released Wednesday shows the centrist candidate is still the favourite to win. But it also predicts that the first round of voting on Sunday is too close to call.
Iran is the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism and is responsible for intensifying multiple conflicts and undermining U.S. interest in countries such as Syria, Yemen, Iraq, and Lebanon, and continuing to support attacks against Israel. An unchecked Iran has the potential to travel the same path as North Korea and take the world along with it. The Trump administration has no intention of passing the buck to a future administration on Iran.
O'Reilly and Ailes are gone less than a year after Gretchen Carlson made her allegations. And there's a lesson here. Whether the allegations were true or not, for too long, women have been taught to stay quiet, don't ruffle feathers, just ignore things and work it all out and work hard. Hopefully that culture is now changing, but it will not change on its own. We still need women and men in every organization to be brave and to speak out.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's April 20th, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day. Lots to cover this morning. It is the March for Science coming up this weekend, and we will be talking with Sophie Schran. She's Science with Sophie. Remember her? She's a returning guest to The Opening Bell. We'll talk a little bit about the march and her new program as well, how it's all coming along. It's the business of science. Takes our second segment this morning. Coming up in just a minute, our thought leader conversation for this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are pointing toward another positive open on Wall Street later, up about 41 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures look to be higher as well. Crude oil is trading at $50.79 a barrel, up more than a half a percent. Around the globe this morning, markets in Europe generally higher. The FTSE, the only lower, off about let's call it almost a quarter, and it's off 11 points this morning. Everything else is up, though. Everything else looks good in Europe. The DAX is up 22. The CAC is up 49. In Asia this morning, generally lower numbers, except for the Nikkei, which is up about a full percent this morning. Everything else seems to have red arrows next to it. A couple of other stories we're watching for you since you went to bed last night. First, in the world of trade, global trade, Japan reports its exports rose at a faster pace than expected, 12% in March, while imports jumped nearly 16% from a year earlier. The data reported Thursday suggests relatively strong foreign and domestic demand could lift growth for the world's number three economy in this quarter. Also, locally here, Caterpillar Incorporated has named Deerfield as the location for its new corporate headquarters, countering a trend in companies that were moving to downtown Chicago. The manufacturer of heavy earth-moving equipment announced in January it was going to leave its longtime home in Peoria for the Chicago area. Now it is settled on Deerfield, a site close to O'Hare Airport, according to the company. Lots of geopolitical concerns these days, from North Korea to Syria to Russia. It's the focus of our thought leader conversation this morning. This week's thought leader is Don Lloyd. He's the senior vice president, manager of capital markets, foreign exchange, rate swaps, and commodity derivatives. And he is with us this morning. Don, welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning. Good to be back.
Good to see you. I thought about you a couple of times over the last week when I saw the images of the aircraft carriers steaming towards wherever it was they were steaming towards. Every morning, it seems, in the business headlines, I've been mentioning geopolitical risks. How bad is it?
It's always fun to see the USS Ronald Reagan out there in the U.S. flexing their muscles internationally. I sort of fly the flag a little bit longer into the night under the spotlight when those days occur. I sort of like that. The 24-hour news cycle has been on fire. No question about that. There are things that are popping all over the globe, not just domestically, but internationally as well. Hottest thing off the press, UK, Theresa May calling a referendum for a vote. Looks like, again, you just have to admire the Brits on how they do this. You know, they Prime Minister, technically she can't call a vote. She could before 2011. She could just call an election whenever she wanted to. After 2011, she needs the House of Commons to sit there and propose a vote. So she basically said, let's have a vote. Let's have an election. And then she'd go into the House of Commons, and the House of Commons pushed that through. So, but then they've got between now and June 8th to have all of their discussions, all of their debates. It's a limited expenditure, you know, and they're going to have it, get it over with, and move on with business. And what a refreshing way to, you know, watch a government operate at an international level. But again, that's just one example of the uncertainty that's out there, whether it's the USS Ronald Reagan steaming off, you know, into the east, or the UK
South
elections.
Or wherever it was.
So lots of things that are popping on out there.
And immediately after the referendum vote was announced, the pound fell, but it recovered a little bit. Talk to us a little bit about the impact on the currency market.
Yeah. UK, again, front and center, the pound. If you look at the last 30 years in the foreign exchange markets, there have been eight times where the British pound sterling has had 20 to 30% moves within 6 months. We're in one of those periods right now, I think. As we move into this election, as we move then into the whole Brexit discussion, the volatility of the British pound sterling is going to be pretty significant. Maybe back to the times of the late 1980s, where we haven't seen the volatility that we saw back then. The foreign exchange markets can become extremely volatile and very dangerous very quickly. There's a lot of people that are out there that haven't experienced those types of moves before, and I think we're moving quickly into one of those periods, which will be exciting for our markets. It's something to talk about. It's something to go out and you know, speak to your client base about. Certainly, there's going to be risk mitigation there. But you know, imagine that within 6 months, a 30% gain or loss.
Yeah.
It's only happened eight times in the last 30 years, which is once every 3 or 4 years. But we're moving to that time again.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program at 522. Our thought leader conversation this morning with Don Lloyd, focusing on the foreign currency markets. And Don, we were talking before the break about some of the geopolitical concerns in this. It is a time of volatility for some, a lot of concern out there. What do you, I guess we're thankful to have your expertise in this matter, because it really takes somebody who's been there before. You've been there before.
Hedge. It is a risk that's out there. It is a risk that is easily forgotten, because most of the time people in treasury or finance who are managing this risk, they've got 25 or 30 other things that they're doing. And when we're in periods of non-volatile markets, which we have been for some time, it's very easy for the attentiveness to these types of risks to sort of fall down into the low priority type categories. The problem with that is when volatility comes back and comes back with a vengeance, people are unprepared. They're basically asleep at the wheel, and that's when the phone rings off the hook and they call me and they say, my gosh, what do we do? And we cannot put blood back into the body, but we can sit there and say, here's how you have to mitigate this risk. A disciplined hedging program is key to risk mitigation, just so that you don't have to worry about that corner of your business. And it's sort of the prioritizing that on a very low basis that sort of catches people off guard.
Where would be a hedge? Where would those folks go? I know gold is where some people have been putting some of their money to be safe. Where would you suggest?
Oh, I'm just talking British pound sterling. If you have conversion needs and you have not locked into a rate today to be used at some point in the future, if you can sit here today and say, what are my British pound needs over the next 12 months, the next 18 months, the next 24 months? A lot of companies can estimate pretty closely what those are. And even if you're 60% right or 70% right, it's better than nothing. That's what I'm talking about, is to sit there and lock into those exchange rates today so that you know what exchange rate you're going to be using 6 months from now, 12 months from now. Other than that, you're at the complete mercy of the market. Maybe the rate goes your way. Maybe it doesn't. That's uncertainty. Okay, that's going to create havoc to your planning and to your budgetary process and erode your profitability margins, or maybe even enhance them. The issue is that you don't know what it's going to be. Take that out of the equation. make it known, get back to producing what you actually produce and doing what your business is actually. It's not about speculating in the market. Mm-hmm. It's about making widgets. It's about selling things, selling goods and services. Focus on that.
The other part of this is North Korea and Russia and those two hotbeds of activity. The worst case scenario is obviously a war. That would be horrible for, I'm guessing, everybody, all from an investment standpoint. What would we see in that case?
Yeah. Again, the U.S. flexing its muscles out there, certainly a more aggressive stance than we've seen any time over the last 8 to 10 years. It's creating uncertainty out there. It's going to get money moving. The problem is where does the money move to? Because used to be, the markets will seek out places of low risk for some return. And the U.S. has always been beneficial to that. Problem is, domestically, we've got our own uncertainties going on here. I mean, if you take a look at the current administration and the campaign that they got elected on, you know, it was basically immigration reform, it was tax reform, it was health care reform, and it was regulatory revision. Those were really the four platforms that they got elected on. Well, health care reform went nowhere. They couldn't reach a consensus on that. Tax reform is gigantic. I mean, it's much bigger than health care reform. Nothing's going to be done in 2017. Regulatory revision, watch some policy leaders change seats in there. I think they can make a little bit of a headway there. But then you're rolling into 2018. And 2018, mid-year elections.
Another election.
And we're not the UK, which gets these things done in 25 days. We're the United States, where you spend $50 million and
years.
and the political commercials at TV go on and on forever. We're moving into that. That's going to create uncertainty. So where does the money go? Right now, you see these the flows are moving back into treasuries. And that's why you're seeing yields on treasury bonds come down or prices go up. You know, how is that happening when, you know, the Fed is talking about possibly 5 rate hikes over the next 2 years?
Yeah.
So you've got all this uncertainty around the globe. Right now, the money's looking just to be parked on the sideline for some safe haven stuff. I think it's going to be treasuries, could be gold. I still think the sleeper out there is going to be the Canadian economy. Canada tends to be has been isolated from this and insulated from this and managing their economy quite well over the last 10 years or so. You know, I think the Canadian dollar is going to benefit wholeheartedly from this.
Yeah. The other thing I saw this week was the president talking about the dollar. I said, I can't wait to talk to Don about that. Explain to us what he might be thinking or doing.
Well, yeah, I love presidents. You know, they have opinions, yeah. and some of them voice those opinions. We certainly have a president that likes to voice a lot of things, mm-hmm. And this is not off limits by any means. The problem is that even though he wants a weaker dollar, he doesn't set policy. He doesn't do that. He can say whatever he wants. The Federal Reserve can influence exchange rates probably more than anyone else can here in the United States. And the Fed has always had, and I think continue to have, a non-intervention policy. They are not going to sit there and direct where the dollar goes against currencies. They let the market figure that out. The role of the Fed is to smooth out extreme fluctuations should they occur. So if volatility hits and the markets, you know, start swinging around in very unusual fashions, the Fed will come in with liquidity to sit there and smooth those out. Other than that, the Fed's not going to sit there and say the dollar should be stronger, the dollar should be weaker. Now, I can understand why the Trump administration wants it. You know, if the strong dollar weakens, which means that the purchasing power of our overseas counterparties becomes stronger, they can buy more goods with their euros and more goods with their yen. Hopefully, if their economies start to bubble out, they're going to be buying more of our goods. Our goods will become cheaper to them. I get that. I mean, I understand, you know, how that all fits together. But just because, you know, President Trump is saying he wants a weaker dollar doesn't mean anything like that's going to happen. Again, I put that in the category of what Vice President Pence was doing on the USS Ronald Reagan. A lot of verbal flexing of muscle, which doesn't really mean a whole heck of a lot other than verbal flexing of muscle.
I felt a little sorry for Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, because he had to come out and clean that up a little bit.
A little bit.
And he must have a tough job.
Of course they do. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine, you know, trying to sit there and stay on point and online as opposed to this sort of zigzag pattern we've been seeing? Like I said, the 24-hour news cycle has been just on fire, you know, with a lot of things going on out there. But even domestically, if you look, you take a look at the U.S. market and, you know, the beige book that came out, earlier this month, you know, it's showing labor shortages. You're seeing wage increase, you know, wage pushes going on. Wage increases are going up. There is no question that the Fed is going to take and continue to take a tightening view when it comes to interest rates. When you compare that to Europe, you know, of the 25 or 30 countries that 6 months ago were in negative nominal and real rate environment, a third of those now are out of the negative rate environment. Soon it's going to be a half. Soon it's going to be no one's going to be in a negative rate environment over in Europe anymore. So what you're seeing is that the whole yield curves are starting to move up and they're all starting to shift up. And the U.S. is leading that. And as those interest rate differentials widen and narrow, because everything doesn't move together in nice orderly fashion, it's sort of like a train, you know, the locomotive goes first and then, you know, the caboose goes last. And you know, it's like an accordion moving back and forth. Mm-hmm. Those are the flows that the market looks for. It looks for those differentials and those movements in differentials. And that's what sits there and has the money flowing into different parts of the country.
Don, good to see you again. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Steve.
Don Lloyd is a senior vice president and manager of capital markets in charge of foreign exchange, rate, swaps, and commodity derivatives at Associated Bank. Remember, you can hear more of our thought leader conversations online. All you have to do is go to WGNradio.com, to the opening bell page, and click there to see our past conversations. And you can follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program at 542. Glad to have you along today. This Saturday, Earth Day, the 22nd of April, is also the day we march for science. Marches are scheduled all across the country as scientists hit the streets to talk about the importance of science in every aspect of our lives, in health, safety, economies, and governments. We thought we would bring in Sophie Schran this morning. Remember her. She's Science with Sophie. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning, Steve.
So glad to have you back with us here. This march on Saturday is shaping up to be a pretty big deal, isn't it?
It is. I'm very excited. I will be there. I know a number of scientists and science fans who are all going to be there as well.
Why do we have to have a march for science?
Good question. Well, science right now is in a place where it really hasn't been before. Science is being challenged in ways that are different from what we've seen in the past. Science is always being challenged by other scientists, by new studies and new findings, new discoveries. That's a inherent part of science. But what we're seeing now is a different kind of risk that science is being placed at. It's being questioned by people who are not science literate, and it's becoming at risk for losing funding, losing credibility, which is ultimately going to have a huge impact on all of our lives.
How does taking part in this march help in that regard? Because generally we think of scientists as really non-political types, but many are becoming activists. Why is that important, first of all, and what impact do you think that's going to have?
You're right. Science is inherently not political. It's supposed to be nonpartisan and unbiased. And now we kind of have to dive in a different way. The goal of the march is severalfold. One is to increase awareness, right, is to send a message globally. This march is happening all over the world. It's really meant to inspire some action as well. So we're going to march on Saturday, and that's just the beginning. If you're interested in getting involved in science advocacy and saying, hey, science is important and we need it, then there are going to be a lot of different resources at the end of the march. They're doing a science expo, so you can learn about different scientific research that's going on and different ways that you can get involved and keep moving forward.
Did you ever think we would come to this point, Sophie, where we would have to go into the streets to sort of say, hey, listen, this is important, not just in scientific areas, but in really every part of our lives. Pay attention.
Yeah, It's very surprising to me. But then again, I've been surprised by a lot of things in the past few months. So I think that what we as scientists are realizing more and more is that making science accessible and helping the public realize how much science permeates everyday life is going to help us to just be better communicators and to bring the rest of the world on to this idea of how important science is.
In the intro, I mentioned how it plays a vital role in all kinds of different areas, health, safety, government. In this program, we focus a lot on business and economy. How important is science to those areas? How would it impact those areas?
It already is, and it's going to continue to impact the economy, specifically in this year's Earth Day and Science March. It's focusing on climate change because that is what is being denied by people who are in leadership positions right now who don't know much about science, who aren't science literate. So in terms of some specific examples, we're already seeing changes happen in the economy based on the effects of climate change. Sea level rise has caused flood insurance to increase. So people are leaving their homes because they can't afford flood insurance. So that is going to affect local economies. You have the difference between coal producing and fossil fuel jobs versus green technology that's starting to become more popular, where that's going to affect the economy. And as soon as we can get onto sustainable energy sources and focus on creating those new jobs, that's going to affect us as well.
Yeah, I love how the March for Science page, which is marchforscience.org, I believe, that one of their taglines is, "There is no planet B."
Yes, it's so true. I love it, too. It really sums up everything that we are trying to say right now.
Yeah. Well, Sophie, the last time we talked with you, you were getting ready to launch your channel and be famous and all of that stuff. How is all of that going?
It's going really well. We had an Indiegogo campaign crowdfunding in the fall, and it was really successful. We had contributors from all over the world, and now we are finalizing scripts and getting ready to produce the fully produced season one. In the meantime, we are releasing episodes on the YouTube channel that are pretty, you know, smaller, like low-key things that that I can do pretty easily, and that is season zero. So Science with Sophie season zero is out on YouTube. We're releasing new episodes every once in a while, so you can check that out too.
Yeah, and you can check out sciencewithsophie.com. And remind us again, Sophie, where your shows will appear when they launch.
Right now, they're going to be all on the YouTube channel. So you can go to YouTube.com/Science with Sophie, and you'll find everything you need.
And if somebody wants to come out and march with you this weekend, where are you going to be marching, and how can people get involved?
I'm going to be there starting at 10 a.m. There's going to be a big rally at the beginning, and that is at Columbus Drive, just south of Jackson. And there are going to be some really great keynote speakers. Emily Grassley from the Field Museum is going to be there. And so you can come and march with us. You can register on Eventbrite as well ahead of time if you want to, but you don't have to. You can just show up. And then we'll be marching, and then we'll be going to the Science Expo at the very end. And so I encourage people to march with us, march in, if you're in a different city, march in your city as well. And then really think about how you can support different institutions that are making these strong statements on science, that are coming out and defending it specifically and strongly, because we need to support our cultural institutions that are taking a stand for science.
Sophie, thanks for marching for us and for being here on the opening bell this morning.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve. See you there.
Thank you. Sophie Schrand with us this morning. Again, you can follow her on Twitter at Science with Soph and online, sciencewithsophie.com. And the March for Science is at marchforscience.com. I think I said org earlier. It's marchforscience.com. And you can follow on Twitter, #MarchForScience.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:53 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are looking for a positive open on Wall Street later, up about 44 points. All of the other markets futures in the U.S. looking higher as well. Gold and silver, though, are trading a little bit lower today. Gold is off almost a third. Crude oil flat this morning at $52.65 a barrel. A couple of other stories we're watching for you. Saudi Arabia's oil minister is suggesting that production cuts agreed to by OPEC and non-OPEC members may need to continue. The comments came this morning amid significant concerns about the overall glut of oil and global trading in oil. OPEC agreed in late November to cut its production by nearly 1.2 billion barrels a day for 6 months. the first reduction agreed to by the cartel since 2008. Nearly a dozen other countries pledged in December to cut an additional 558,000 barrels a day. Crude oil sold for over $100 a barrel in the summer of 2014 before bottoming out below $30 a barrel in January of last year. Crude now standing just over 50 bucks a barrel. Comments came at an oil conference in Abu Dhabi, the capital of the United Arab Emirates. Now, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook this morning for this Thursday, it's April 20th, 2017. Investors will be looking at another important economic indicator today. The Labor Department will report on first-time applications for unemployment benefits over the past week. Freddie Mac will report on long-term mortgage rates. In corporate news, Visa will report quarterly financial results today. One of the big banks reporting financial results today. Also, we'll see some of those other business numbers come out just after the opening bell, including some consumer sentiment figures a little bit later on. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, April 20th, 2017.